You're listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm in Spain and I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Amazing, isn't it?
Daniel.
Actually in person.
Like travel. Yeah,
air
travel.
First time in a couple of months, isn't it? Anyway.
Well, you know, you've been floating around, haven't you? Will-o'-the-wisp. Let's get straight to Lionel, will we? Lionel, even though he's not here, is going to be doing the daily Tale of the Etapa. So Lionel's somewhere in Watford.
Hey, Lionel's kept a very low profile if he is here today. I've not seen him.
Not even anywhere near that. Very nice buffet. Anyway, over to you, Lionel, for the Tale of the Etapa.
Thank you. Glad you've made it to the Vuelta, Richard. In time to see Stage 7 to Puebla de Sanabria. The last chance for the rouleurs and sprinters before the climbers take over for the best part of a week. An early break of 6 was caught with 44 kilometres to go, which meant there was plenty of time for another dangerous-looking move to go away in the last 30 kilometres. Astana's Dario Cataldo started it, and he was joined by teammate Luis Leon Sanchez, who was second yesterday, Gianluca Brambilla of Etix, who won a stage of the Giro, Simon Clark of Cannondale Drapac, and Luis Angel Mate of Cofidis, who had also been in the earlier six-man move. The lead was just 30 seconds with 15 kilometres to go, and as the others sat up, Luis Leon Sanchez and Simon Clark refused to give in, and they battled onto the line even though the odds were against them, and they were caught with only 300 metres to go. The bunch sprint was won by IAM Cycling's Jonas van Genechten, ahead of Daniele Bernati of Tinkoff and Alejandro Valverde. Van Genechten is reportedly joining Cofidis next year because IAM Cycling are stopping at the end of the season. However, they've signed off in real style, winning stages of all three Grand Tours this season, after Roger Kluger's win at the Giro and Harlinson Pantano's at the Tour. So far, only Sky, Etix and Orica can say that they've done that. There was a crash on the final right-hand corner with 600 metres to go, and Alberto Contador came off worst, scuffing his left side. Chris Froome was also caught up in the crash, but he remained third overall and didn't appear to be badly hurt. No change overall. Darwin Atapuma in red. Jani Meersman leads the points. Alexandre Genies is the king of the mountains, and Atapuma also leads the combined classification. A few abandons to report. Michał Kwiatkowski of Sky pulled out with back pain. Ryan Taramay is also out, with his Katusha team claiming he was hit by another team car. So tomorrow, a first category summit finish, and the climbers will come to the fore. Hope you're enjoying it out there, Richard. Speak to you soon.
Thanks for that, Lionel. It wasn't the most thrilling of stages, but as with every stage, there were certainly incidents, weren't there? Certainly talking points, not least Alberto Contador. More rotten luck for him at the end there. I should have asked you, Daniel, in the absence of Lionel, where are we?
We are outside the press room in Puebla de Sanabria.
Are we out of Galicia at last?
We're in Castilla y León, I think. Yeah. Pretty sure we are, in fact. We just crossed the border, didn't we? About 20 kilometres before the finish.
I think we did, yeah. So, what did we make of today's stage, Daniel? It was one where it didn't look like an awful lot was going to happen. The winner, I mean, I was standing with you at the finish line, and we both, let's admit it, we both turned to each other and said, who was that?
Yeah, I think we
fair
said
to describe
else.
Him as
I think it was, that was similar to what we said.
Fair to describe him as a journeyman pro?
To a certain extent, but he's someone who's getting better every year. He won. His career really started to kick into gear a couple of years ago. He won a stage of the Tour of Poland, if I'm not mistaken, GP4Me, and he is getting better every season. And he's the latest IAM cycling rider to really stir to life post the announcement that the team was going to be discontinued and was going to end at the end of the season.
Stages in all three Grand Tours that they've won this year. This is Van Genechten, is that correct? This is his first Grand Tour at the ripe old age of 29, turns 30 in a couple of weeks. Started off as a BMX rider and then was a mountain biker. Very handy with his stunts on the bike and pull a mean wheelie.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of typical of the IAM riders. They've got a lot of... it's a fairly motley bunch of talented riders who haven't seemed to gel particularly well together, and that's maybe borne out by the fact they have ridden very well when they've really been, well, riding for themselves, I suppose. You have to think that a lot of them have been trying very hard to put themselves personally in the shop window, and it's probably been quite difficult to manage, and it might also be a little bit of an indictment on some of the tactics that have been employed and some of the efforts that have been made to gel them together over the past couple of years. Because as we've said, they since the Giro, really, when Roger Kluger won the stage, and even Heinrich Hassler sort of stirred to life there as well. And, you know, the Tour de France, Jarlins and Pantano, and here, and there have been a lot of other occasions as well, other races where they've been very, very prominent. Even yesterday, Matthias Frank. And they've ridden kind of out of character. They've sort of come out of their shell, a lot of these riders.
They've ridden as if they've got nothing to lose, which exactly. In a sense they don't. You know, Larry Warbass wrote a blog for Ruler at the start of this Vuelta about how, you know, he's fighting. You know, they're all fighting. They're fighting for their futures in the sport. And a guy like Van Genichten, he's not a guy who would be given the leadership role in any team, is he? And yet he is. He's clearly got a decent finish. You know, that was a very, very good win today on a hard finish. And he's got a good kick at the end like that.
And, Richard, as you say, they've been riding as though they've been fighting for their lives, which is in a way ironic in the sense that this team, the whole founding principle of this team, or one of this team's key policies, which was one-year contracts, was that they were all going to be fighting for their lives at all times, but it just hasn't looked like that, and it hasn't been the case until the moment when the owner of the team, Michel Thiaz, announced in May that he was pulling out.
Well, it was a stage that sort of came to life in the last 30 kilometres or so. Astana really drilled it on the front. And it was all for Luis Leon Sanchez, who went away on the final climb, as Lionel told us, countering a move by Dario Cataldo. A few others went across, and one of them was Simon Clark. And Simon Clark also had a go a couple of days ago, and it looked good. Cannondale are fighting for their lives in a way as well, because they need something from this race. And Simon Clark is the perfect candidate for a stage like today. He had a real go. Him and Luis Leon Sanchez were caught in the final sort of 50, 60 metres or so of the stage. I spoke to Simon Clark at the finish. Here he is. I think we can see the effort that took out you. Did you think you had it there?
Look, to be honest, Luis, as you probably saw, did most of the work. I just tried to help him as much as I could. On a finish like that into a headwind, it's pretty easy to see who's the strongest. He definitely was. And honestly, I was just riding for second place realistically, but I feel sorry for him. He was so strong today and he deserved a win after second yesterday as well. So.
Yeah, it was a good dig you made the other day as well. You've had a couple of, made a couple of efforts to win stages. You know, I guess that's your personal goal here, is it, at the Vuelta?
Yeah, look, I trained really hard for the Olympics after I got the call up, and I really pushed the limits in my training there. So I didn't want to just race the Olympics and then stop with the effort that I put in. And so the team accepted my request to come here to the Vuelta, and I'm here to prove that I was worth the spot.
It's a strong team you've got here. You've been very active, always had men in the breaks and so on. Are you, optimistic? It's been a disappointing year at the Grand Tour for Cannondale. Are you optimistic that this team is going to, you know, do something at this Vuelta?
Look, I'm not going to project what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. Where every team has their routine and a process, and we go through that process and try and achieve the best result possible.
So the Simon Clark there, he was absolutely exhausted, as you'd expect, but he was in quite a state, and I had to wait a while before he was able to speak. And it's not often you find yourself in a stage winning position in a Grand Tour. It was realistic that Luis Leon Sanchez was going much better than him, and had they stayed away, he'd have probably come second. But you know, you don't get many chances. He's sort of had two, and I did sort of ask him about the rest of the team's prospects. He wasn't really biting on that, because as I said before we heard the interview there, there's a bit of pressure on them, I think.
Yeah, and they've really come to this this race with the heavy artillery. I mean, they've got a very strong team, a lot of big name riders, a lot of riders that need to save their seasons, really, or quite a few anyway. Davide Formolo has not had the best season. He was okay in the Giro, but he's here. They've got Pierre Rolland, who of course was very unlucky in the Tour de France. They've got Talensky, who needs to save his season. But just going back to Clark, I was intrigued and slightly baffled when at the start of the season Cannondale signed him, and they sort of billed him as their new road captain. Now, I don't really see Simon Clark in that kind of vein. I think Simon Clark's an excellent rider when he's really given a lot of freedom, and he's allowed to show the kind of opportunistic streak that he's shown a couple of times this week. But he doesn't really strike me as someone you would use and almost waste as a road captain.
I think it depends on the race.
It depends on the definition of road captain as well.
At the Giro, as Joe Dombrowski told us, he was an excellent road captain. He felt he was very good at sort of marshalling the troops, and that was a team at the Giro with a very specific objective. It was to help Rigoberto Urán, so it wasn't one where Clark would necessarily have his own chances.
And let's face it, Cannondale would know better than me whether he's a good road captain or not.
Look, we've been joined by a fan's favourite, François Thomazeau, a friend from the Tour de France. François, what brings you to the Vuelta?
It's my second Vuelta, actually, and I'm working a little bit for the organisers. They need to get quotes in the morning and quotes in the evenings, and I write the official race summaries in French and English as well.
How's your bullshit radar?
I try not to put too much bullshit in the official communiques.
Can I put something through the bullshit radar?
Darwin, you can, of course.
Darwin Atapuma being very, very diplomatic about losing teammates, and his teammates all going back to, or most of them going back to help Samuel Sanchez. He put a very brave face on that. But that struck me as something that might fall foul of your bullshit radar.
And my other problem in the world is I don't know how to say bullshit in Spanish.
Toro something, no?
Probably, yeah.
It's been a good Vuelta so far for the French, though, François.
It's been surprisingly good for the French. I suppose it's not so surprising. The French do well, usually, on the Vuelta, especially, how could I say, not unheralded, but, you know, maybe Serie B, as they say here, French riders, because it's so much pressure on the Tour that it's much, much more difficult. The French don't handle the pressure too well. And here, you know, it's open. You've got like 20, 25 riders going for the GC. And for the rest of the guys, it's wide open. So the French were lucky to take the right breaks and to be good enough to you know, go ahead and win them. Genies, it was not his first. He won a stage on the Vuelta already. So, you know, not a real surprise. He's a good rider. I think he's been a little bit wasted this last couple of years. And he had his health problems like everybody else. And Lilian Calmejean is a very, very gifted young rider. I think he himself is not aware of how good he is. But I think he realized, but maybe with his stage win, that is much better than he thought. So, generally speaking, even in the sprints, we have a couple of French riders who are doing okay in the top 10. But I mean, the sprints here are, you know, it's the same as the Vuelta. Generally, it's very wide open. So, yeah, it's a bit of a surprise, but not so much of a surprise because, you know, everybody has his chance, and the French are, you know, not as bad, not as good as the rest of the field.
François, can I just ask you a question about Genies? He's going to AG2R Le Mondial next year. Mm-hmm. Is that purely to be Romain Bardet's water carrier, or is he going to get his own freedom?
My impression is that AG2R Le Mondial are really trying to build a team. You know, the Team Sky influence is enormous, and lots of teams now are emulating what Team Sky are doing. And my impression that is the recruiting, because AG2R are recruiting Mathias Franck as well and other riders of that caliber. So very, very strong, solid climbers who could be leaders on you know, in their own terms. So my impression is that the number one priority for AG2R will be to have riders to support Romain Bardet on the Tour. Now, I talked to Mathias Franck yesterday, and he was telling me that on other races like Paris-Nice or Tirreno or races in Switzerland, you know, guys like him or maybe Genies could have their chances. The problem with Genies, I think, is probably, you know, he's probably wasted his chances to make a career for himself. Maybe because he was a little bit injured. Maybe because FDJ did not always, you know, put a lot of trust in him. Because he's a shy guy. Because he lacks self confidence. Much as Frank was saying exactly the same. He said, you know, I'm happy to leave Yam in a way. Well, he's not living in Yam Cycling. Yam Cycling won't exist next season. But he said, this way I won't be in the spotlight anymore. And some riders just don't like the spotlight. And I think Genies is one of those. And he probably is better when he's not expected. So my impression is, if AG2R have a plan B, it's Pierre Latour. They've said, very early in this Vuelta that he's the leader here, and he's what 22, and he's very promising. Julien Jourdi, the team director, even told me he's childish, you know. So, but I want to try him as a leader very early on, so that he gets to know how to position himself as a leader, and that's the plan as far as I'm.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Today we're broadcasting the Tour de l'Avenir. You were mentioning before the break there, François-Pierre Latour, 22 years old. Tour de l'Avenir is the shop window for a lot of the young riders. And a Frenchman is looking very strong, David Godu.
Godu, yeah. He's
19.
Yeah, he's... Marc Madiot spotted him, you know, at a small race, and he said, and apparently he called a few friends and his brother and said, guys, I've spotted one of the best guys I've seen since I discovered Philippe Gilbert. So the comparison, and he said he's nondescript, you know, he's ugly on a bike, he looks like a small bird. I mean, he has nothing special, but he's very special. He's very strong, and Madiot, you know, has the eye for that. And he said, you know, watch out for this guy. We really must sign him. And well, obviously, it's paying off.
He's looking like he might win that. I meant to say it's broadcast today on Eurosport Tour de l'Avenir, and also the final stage on Saturday.
And speaking of 19-year-olds or teenagers at the Tour de l'Avenir, of course, you're going to miss out. The French are going to miss out on Adrien Costa, aren't they? I think he's going to represent the USA. Is that right?
I think that is right.
He's eligible for both.
His parents are French. Yeah, we've got an interview that we'll play with him in the future. He's lying third overall at the moment. But yeah, he's 19. He's just turned 19. So two of the youngest guys in the race, really, in first and third overall. Great prospects for the future. So back to the Vuelta, which of course is on Eurosport every day. I've arrived armed with some Pedler de Charme t-shirts, so we'll ramp up Pedler de Charme now that I'm here. Sent me three extra smalls and two mediums, so I'm going to have to find some burly riders before we get to the high mountains and get rid of these t-shirts. But on the overall in the overall picture today, the talking point, I suppose, was Alberto Contador. Is he unlucky, or is there something else going on?
I think this is classic. This is typical of what happens to riders when they're losing some of their strength, they're losing some of their confidence, they're losing, you know, some of their knack of being in the right position. I think it often happens to riders when they're really stretched at the end of their career, trying to hold on to something or the vestiges of their old ability. And or it could just be a coincidence, but it doesn't look like a coincidence, does it, that he's falling so much?
And he looked bashed up. I mean, he fell on the same side that he hurt at the Tour. His shoulder looked bad, and you know, he was unhappy, I think, and worried.
And he was complaining about pain in his calf in particular. I think that was one of the major problems.
You know, it wasn't studying the slow-mo. It wasn't his fault. And he was in the right place. He was in the place that everybody's told to be, near the front. Some riders came up the inside of him and he was basically hit.
I was told by Romain Hardy, another French rider who finished ninth, that Bagdonas was the guy who took him to the canvas, as you say in boxing. Yeah, the thing is, I agree 100% with what Daniel just said. Maybe it's painful to write off Alberto Contador. He's been such a probably the greatest talent of the past 10 or 15 years. But, you know, it doesn't happen by chance. When you crash so many times, when you miss so many chances, I think he's a little bit... Yeah, he's probably a little bit under. You know, sport, a great skier once told me, you know, skiing is all about knowing your limits and try to be just at the edge, but not over the edge, because if you are over the edge, you crash. And that's probably what's happening with Alberto. We would hate to see him, you know, pull out or not be as good as he could be. But unfortunately, you know, that's the way things go. Once again, we have this problem. We had crashes on this Vuelta in the finale. In the finales, there's been quite a few. It's nothing new, unfortunately. We won't, you know, come back on the bollard problem in Lugo. But I was discussing with Neil Stevens about it, and the same questions arise again and again. What can you do? Should times be taken at the last 3Ks, you know, every time, so that, you know, guys, leaders like Contador, Froome wouldn't have to be in this position? It's an endless controversy.
Yeah, and among those suggestions that we've heard this year many times is smaller peloton, smaller teams. But you know, today there was really no excuse. It wasn't a big group going in there, was it? And you know, Philippe Gilbert was very upset at the finish. I spoke to him about the GC riders and the GC teams getting too involved and causing confusion and chaos in the finale. But like I said, how many guys finished together? Was it 20, yeah. 30? It shouldn't have been dangerous.
95, actually, have all been given the same time, right, on okay. the stage. So it was a big old group. And I was studying that last, you know, 3Ks to see, because it was quite a testing, and it's a kind of finish where there might be splits. And if you take the time on the 3K to go barrier, it renders meaningless the final 3 kilometres, where, you know, and then where's the incentive for organisers to put in little climbs? Or, you know, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I can see the point of view of just taking the time at 3K, and then the GC guys can just sit up and meander in. But to me, that would take something away from the racing. And the point of the race is that the race is to the line, isn't it? So I don't really know what the answer is.
And Contador also made a comment about apparently people don't like braking anymore, but you know, again, that's part of the risk reward, isn't it? And if you get a rider who doesn't brake and who thinks that he can, you know, gain a few positions by not braking, then all power to him, really. And you know, if that particular rider is going to make up a few seconds doing that, then you know,
if
that's
he can
part
do
of
it
the game.
Safely, and
it's
if he can do it safely, his peers will let him know. That's the other thing. There are checks and balances there, aren't there, within the peloton? I mean, the dangerous riders are told that they're dangerous, and they're.
In the Tour, there was kind of a gentleman agreement, so we heard, you know, when Sagan made his point that, you know, some riders shouldn't be there. Apparently, the problem was solved straight away, because there was a kind of, you know, pact in the peloton that some guys wouldn't be too close to the sprinting positions. Maybe it's a problem that they should solve together at some stage, saying, okay, guys, you know, go and have your day. But today was different, because you had Alejandro Valverde sprinting for both the stage win and maybe the red jersey, so which meant that the BMC shouldn't be too far. And I'm not sure the 3K to go solution would be the one. Is there one? I doubt it, actually.
And I think as cycling evolves, professional cycling evolves, and particularly becomes more global, the days of these gentlemen's agreements are slowly fading away, because I think it's just, you know, simply unmanageable for such a diverse peloton to develop any kind of consensus. You know, the Vuelta and the Giro, they both used to be contested almost, well, 80% by home teams. Everyone was speaking the same language, and I just don't think the riders really speak to each other that much.
Well, listen, at the finish, I spoke to Dave Brailsford, the Team Sky principal, just about Chris Froome, really, also about Michał Kwiatkowski, the Polish rider who had to abandon today. So I started off by asking him about him. Here he is, Dave Brailsford. So first of all, Dave, Kwiatkowski, out the race. I gather he had a back problem.
Yeah, it's really disappointing on that one. He'd actually had a saddle sore for a couple of days. Well, it was nearly saddle sore chafing, but regardless, I think that then, you know, when the guys get that, they tend to maybe unconsciously just tilt a little bit to one side, protect themselves a little bit. And came back on a bus yesterday, and then we had a long transfer, got back to the hotel, and then it kind of had a back spasm, really, where he just locked up. And so the guys treated it, and you know, he got up this morning, had a go, but it wasn't it was too painful, and so unfortunately he's had to pull out, which is disappointing.
Must be disappointing for him as well, because this was his one Grand Tour this year.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I think it sums up his season, to be honest. I think, you know, for every step forward, you know, we get a step backwards. I mean, obviously he had some good results early on, but I think the thing that we were looking for here, and himself, you know, was just that little bit of consistency. Nothing great, nothing bad, just a nice solid performance. And unfortunately, we're not going to get that, but we'll see how quickly he recovers. I don't think it'll be a long term thing, and hopefully we can recalibrate and still get something out at the end of the season.
How about Chris? I mean, he seems to be in good form. How would you compare his form, where he's at, compared to the Tour de France?
Well, I think that's a good question, insofar as I don't think you can compare. And I'll tell you why. My interpretation of why. So we're coming to the Tour de France, and you want to go in there absolutely pinging. You know you're ready, you're built towards it, you're fresh. And you really go into it when the feeling completely on it. And then suppose that coming into the Welter, you've obviously had the tour where you competed right the way through to the end. You've got to travel to Rio, come back a couple of days, and then straight into the Welter. So I think if you go in expecting to feel the same, absolutely binging, it's unlikely that's going to happen. So I think, you know, from a general sort of mindset point of view, you've got to come in there with a bit more, okay, we're going to build into this as against hitting the ground running. And I think it's fair to say that Chris, a little bit, you know, as all riders, you've got to get on a bike and get a couple of stages in your leg before you really know where you're at. But I think he's been very pleasantly surprised, and the way he's feeling on the bike and the way he's climbed and the way he's performed so far has been great.
How much does he want it? I mean, he doesn't need it. You know, the Tour is something that's clearly the thing that drives him the most. But how much does he want to win this Vuelta?
He wants it. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think the start of the season, we looked at the combination of Tour, Rio and the Vuelta as being sort of three goals together, as it were. And is it possible to go and do all three? You know, he's won the Tour. He's got a medal out of Rio. And here he is, embarking on, you know, the sort of more decisive stages of the Welter, and I think that's one of his greatest strengths, you know, his mentality and his mental robustness, if you like, and that just, you know, never-ending desire to want it and fight and challenge for the win. It's quite remarkable, really.
Can I ask you a final question, Dave? A lot of talk after the Tour about reducing the sizes of teams. Now, I'm imagining that you wouldn't be in favour of that. So can I ask you, if you were the director of the Tour de France, would you be in favour of that?
I think I'd be in favour of looking at all options, really. I think, you know, you've got to go back and think, okay, why was the race like it was? Was the single cause of the race being like it was, nine riders rather than eight riders? I would say personally that it probably wasn't a bigger contributing factor to the way the race was ridden this year as many are making out. However, I'm not saying that we shouldn't consider all options going forward to make the sport more exciting and a greater spectacle. I think reducing it to, I think you could, if you reduce it by one rider per team, I think that would be okay. But I don't think it would get the, I don't think it would have the impact that people would hope for. And equally, I think if you reduce it too far, I think you've also then got to start thinking about the performance side of it from the teams and the riders' perspective, and what you're asking guys to do and the nature of the race in that respect. So I think there's like all of these things, you can take a very, very quick, you know, quick decision, quick reaction. It's a bit like the race radios, isn't it? Let's stop race radios and racing will be all exciting, it'll be all fantastic, and then we've got them back again, you know. So I think there needs to be a greater depth of thinking, and you think through the permutations and the sort of cause and effect before just jumping on the bandwagon and saying it's a good idea. But we should look at everything.
Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. And we heard before that little break from Dave Brailsford speaking about first about Mikhail Kwiatkowski, and I think you had something to say about Kwiatkowski, the vanity signing, Daniel. Do you feel vindicated?
Well, slightly. He hasn't had the best year. I mean, it's not exactly an annus horribilis. He did win Het Nieuwsblad, didn't he? And he did really...
E3, wasn't it?
E3.
Was it E3 or Het Nieuwsblad? It was
E3.
Of course, yeah,
correct.
Van Avermaet.
And he did show abilities in the Cobble Classics that we didn't know he had. And maybe that's the future direction of his career. Maybe that's the only place that he's going to get the freedom and the latitude he needs at Team Sky. I don't know. I mean, it's a bit of a puzzle for them to solve over the winter, because it hasn't been plain sailing in that relationship between Kwiatkowski and Sky this year.
Tricky one to manage, isn't it? Something else we want to speak to Brailsford, I think, about how you keep guys like him happy. It's a tough one. You know, is he happy coming to the Vuelta? I mean, it probably was, but would he not have liked to have been at the Tour? But then had he gone to the Tour, he would have been merely a number in the Team Sky machine. I asked Dave Brailsford there as well about team sizes and, you know, whether if he was the director of the Tour, he'd be in favour of reducing the size of teams. He kind of skirted the answer a little bit. But he was speaking about Chris Froome too, and just confirming what we can all see with our own eyes, that Froome is in good form and wants to win the Vuelta. I think that's pretty obvious to all of us. He looks, and, you know, once again, he he comes through a stage like that unscathed and untroubled. He did get held up by the crash, but of course everyone ends up at the same time. Shall we finish things there, chaps? Daniel, anything more to
add?
Let's do it. We've got a bit of a drive, haven't we, to our hotel tonight, so let's head off. Francois, thank you very much. Hope you'll be able to join us again.
Yeah. No, last thing, I think tomorrow we'll know if Chris Froome is going to win the Vuelta. It's the ideal finish for him. And if he wins it, and I think he'll win it rather easily, then we'll know.
I agree.
On that note, thank you, Francois. Thank you, Daniel.